Well, good morning. It's Jeff Wine, host of The Car Show here on Sun Sounds Radio. Folks, once again, we have an action-packed show for you today. We're going to catch you up on the latest and the greatest of the world of the automobile. Well, we've got a lot going on in motorsports this week. We've got IndyCars at Mid-Ohio. We have Formula One at Silverstone. And we have NASCAR returning back to Chicagoland Speedway in Joliet, Illinois. We've got a really good article regarding Michael Jordan and a Ferrari that he purchased back in the 90s. That has been found. So that's a cool story. Also, what's going on here locally with our electric vehicle manufacturing company, Lucid, and some changes that are going on there. We've got the silly season in IndyCar where some major changes are happening with driver lineup. Of course, we'll be talking about gas prices. Oh yeah, they're coming down, and that's nice to see. And of course, it wouldn't be the car show without a little car talk. You know what to do. Fasten those seatbelts nice and tight. It's going to be a fast ride on the car show. Let's jump into some local automotive news, and this is from the pages of the Phoenix Business Journal. And the headline reads, EV manufacturer plans hundreds of Arizona layoffs. Well, Lucid Group Incorporated, which manufactures its electric cars south of Phoenix and Casa Grande, disclosed a second round of layoffs in roughly 4 months. The new CEO looks to further pare back the company's workforce and as they are continuing to lose money. Lucid revealed in a filing with the Securities and Exchange Commission that would likely cut about 18% of its employees, and that would be after the 12% cut that was announced in February. At the end of last year, Lucid had 9,000 employees, according to the SEC filing, suggesting more than 1,400 employees will be laid off in the second round of cuts. Now, the first round of layoffs in February had very little effect on Arizona, with some 300 workers trimmed at the company's Bay Area headquarters in California. This time, it's different. The regulatory filings, according to the SEC, California-based Lucid Company said its latest layoffs would include full-time employees, contractors, hourly production workers in the manufacturing. As a part of this reduction, the company has eliminated a second shift of production at its AMP1 factory, and that's here in Arizona, down near Casa Grande. A Lucid spokesperson would not specify how many jobs would be cut at this time in Pinal County, but documents, according to a filing on June 22nd, with approximately 705 employees would be cut out of work. Now, the Business Journal has previously recorded that Lucid employs about 2,800 workers in Casa Grande. Our commitment to Arizona and the Casa Grande community has been important to our success, and that has not changed. We will continue to invest in our presence here as we see opportunities for further growth in the years to come. And that's according to a Lucid spokesperson. Lucid also has struggled seeking to challenge Tesla and the other EV manufacturers, with the end of the tax credits for vehicles purchased hitting California especially hard during this past year. The company brought in Silvio Napoli as the CEO in April after more than a year with an interim CEO at the helm. That interim CEO, Mark Winterhoff, was kept on as chief operating officer when Napoli was hired, but he is now departing the company, according to the June 22nd filing. Lucid has been shifting its gears and some of its workforce and production to its home of its biggest investor, Saudi Arabia. Middle East nation has publicly put the public investment fund has put an additional $1 billion into the company last year, pushing it to its majority ownership. And Lucid has been established a regional headquarters and production facilities in Saudi Arabia. So it sounds like Arizona's losing some jobs. And quite a few jobs at the production down in Casa Grande, and some of those jobs could be moving over to Saudi Arabia. Well, the headline reads, Michael Jordan's secret V12 Ferrari found after 24 years hidden in a garage. Michael Jordan's custom 1997 Ferrari 550 Maranello has finally been found after 24 years. Well, Michael Jordan possesses a legendary status on the basketball court and a matching reputation regarding his incredible taste in supercars. He acquired a magnificent 1997 Ferrari 550 Maranello on May 29, 1997. And the timing was impeccable because he had just secured delivery just 2 weeks before winning his fifth championship ring. The Italian sports car has a dark metallic burgundy paint designated as Rosso Barchetta. The factory also uniquely modified the seat tracks to accommodate his large frame. Well, the basketball legend officially parted ways with his gorgeous V12 machine in December of 2002. The supercar mysteriously disappeared from the public record immediately following a dealership sale. Enthusiasts spent over two decades wondering where this historical vehicle is now residing. Fans frequently marvel at the stunning automobile collection showcased in a recent documentary series about Michael Jordan. However, locating this specifically modified Ferrari has been difficult to find. Now, John Terriman of dealership of Curated and their show We Are Curated YouTube channel spent 10 exhaustive years trying to solve the mystery. His big break came from an ancient internet forum posting hiding a unique serial number. Armed with this serial number, he confirmed that the Grand Tour astonishingly was still listed under Jordan's name in the manufacturer's database. He quickly deployed some private investigators to pinpoint the exact garage that was holding this prized automobile. A relentless search led them to the West Coast. The team called dozens of California mechanics until one of them recognized the distinct burgundy paint job. This mechanic brokered an introduction to a highly secretive owner. Terriman and his team purchased the Ferrari right away with a record-breaking sum, and it's easy to admire this iconic American sports car, especially with a return, with a baseball return, and going to a museum. Recovering the lost V12 required a massive physical manhunt. Well, the Grand Tour was shipped back to Chicago exactly 29 years after its initial purchase. Upon inspecting the trunk, the new owners found a treasure trove of original documents. The factory warranty booklet, which featured Michael Jordan's authentic handwritten signature. Finding the actual autograph on the official paperwork is incredibly rare. This discovery potentially boosts the monetary value and the legendary aura of this vehicle. The crew also celebrated by rolling the vehicle past some of the famous places where Jordan lived, especially his former mansion in Chicago. Now, this discovery highlights how certain celebrity provenance completely transforms the collector car market. This vehicle represents a physical intersection of sports and history, and a premium automobile design. The dark burgundy paint job and the yellow Scuderia shields on the fenders are particularly significant. These exact Ferrari styling cues famously served as a direct design inspiration for the iconic line of footwear, specifically shaped the sleek aesthetic of the Air Jordan 13 basketball sneaker. The phenomenal automotive recovery that it happens to be, as well as Jordan's influence on the car culture, shifted dynamically toward the professional motorsports. The basketball icon is actively expanding his competitive drive into professional stock car racing as a team owner in NASCAR. His modern racing endeavors show that his passion for speed and performance has never failed and never will fade. Seeing this legendary piece of the past return to a spotlight is a massive victory for car enthusiasts worldwide. Yeah, Jordan is a legend, certainly a car that has been owned by him, and a car that has all these signatures and provenance certainly should bring a lot of big money when it finally hits the auction block sometime in the future. NASCAR racing, and last weekend we were at Sonoma, and the headline reads, Van Gisbergen holds off Briscoe for Sonoma Cup victory. Well, Sunday's Toyota Save Mart 350 at Sonoma Raceway followed form, but not without its stiffest fight of Shane Van Gisbergen's briefest career in NASCAR. On the other hand, the opening race of the NASCAR in-season challenge defined handicappers, at least as far as the top-seeded Tyler Reddick was concerned. For the second straight year, Van Gisbergen had to hold off the hard-charging Chase Briscoe over the final laps on the 2-mile, 11-turn road course. Briscoe closed within 1 foot of SGV's bumper in the hairpin on turn 11 on the final circuit, but couldn't get close enough for him to make a move. Yap, quote, it was a tough day, Van Gisbergen said, who finished 0.3 seconds ahead of Briscoe. We were actually pretty bad yesterday, qualified 6th. These guys at the 97 crew did an amazing job turning this car into a winner. The number 19 Chase Briscoe was coming. He really ran a good race, and I just ran out at the end. Van Gisbergen led 74 of the 110 laps to secure his 8th Cup victory in his 68th start, tying NASCAR Hall of Famers Tony Stewart for the second most road course wins and just one behind Jeff Gordon at 9. So Shane Van Gisbergen wins at Sonoma. No big surprise there, but Chase Briscoe had a really good shot. He made a mistake on lap with 4 laps to go, which could have certainly cost him the race. He was closing on Van Gisbergen quickly. So Van Gisbergen won, Briscoe number 2. Ty Gibbs, nice run in 3. Kyle Larson 4, and rounding out your top 5 was Christopher Bell. Well, the headline reads, NASCAR road and street course season is over for this year, and the spot it hit. Well, goodbye NASCAR road courses, farewell to the streets of Coronado Naval Base. That's right, we put the left and right-hand turns in the rearview mirror for 2026. The rest of the NASCAR season is all about turning left. There were 4 road and street courses on the 26th schedule this year, and we have visited all of them, actually even before the calendar flipped to July. So let's do a double take. That's for the last decade or so, we've been conditioned to expect road and street courses to appear throughout the season, one appearing in the first 2 months, a few over the summer, and then one or two in the fall. The last one has traditionally been the Charlotte Roval, and it was not run until either late September or October. At that point, the Roval was either 5th or the 6th road course of the season because NASCAR kept adding more. Well, what a change of having 2 throughout the 20s, the 2000s, and the 2010s. Then there were 6 road and street courses on the schedule in 2025, and that was too much, especially in a 3 and 5 week stretch, or better off even more, 4 and a 9 week stretch during the summer. It was exhausting as 2021, because that year there were 7 because of the addition of a one-off Daytona race that was needed to replace the Auto Club Speedway in California. Now, Sonoma and Watkins Glen have been the only road courses on the Cup schedule for much of the last few decades. They were on the calendar like clockwork. Drivers were used to them. Fans knew when to expect them. They provided a little variety to the oval schedule in NASCAR. It wasn't until 2018 that the schedule expanded from those 2 traditional road courses to 3 with the creation of the Charlotte Roval. NASCAR did that until 3 until season 21 with Circuit Day America, Road America, and the Indianapolis Road Course joined the fray. Over the last 4 years, the schedule has consistently included 6 road and street course races, except in 24 when there were 5. Daytona served its purpose and it was a one and done. Road America quietly disappeared. A wrong in Indianapolis was finally righted, and the return to the oval from the road course was made last year. Mexico, well, so far it's a one and done. And thankfully, the Roval is no more because the oval is back. Chicago had 3 great years, pausing this season for a potentially rumored return in 2027, but NASCAR has now discovered a love for San Diego after a successful event at the Navy base 2 weeks ago. Plus, they can pretty much put a racetrack wherever they want to nowadays. So what does that leave us, and how we bid adieu to the road courses for 2026, and how do we go forward? Well, it's likely that the series will never go back to a 2-year race model of Sonoma and Watkins Glen. 5 or 6 or 7, well, that seems to be too much. While there's been some great road courses and street courses, this year, well, it was no different. And such a thing could be too much. 4 seems to be a sweet number. 5 could be realistic of where NASCAR is going when you start looking at ones that are seemingly grandfathered in, like Sonoma and Watkins Glen. And Circuit Day America, well, it's also proven its worth and down in Texas. NASCAR is very aware that ovals are its core, and that's where everything lies. But what's expected, the majority of that schedule will be going forward. Ben Kennedy and the COO reiterated after San Diego that noting permanent facilities like oval racetracks are the bread and butter of the sport, and its schedule is also acknowledged that 1 or 2 new street course races are in its future. So NASCAR is left vying to strike a correct balance between 3 road courses that has had on the schedule many years, Chicago and San Diego receiving rave reviews, returns would be great. But from there, where does the rotation model going back to adding more? Suddenly you're back to 5 or 6 oval road course races. 4 races were great. Races and locations and spacing would have been nice to have them done and dusted. It's nice to have them done and dusted as we head into the end of the regular season and its championship season. So for now, we bid goodbye to the highlights of road courses, and we'll hopefully see what's going to happen next year and beyond. Well, I love road courses in NASCAR because I'm also an IndyCar and a Formula One fan. But I think that it's missing the fact that we do not have a road course in the playoffs. And I think that's a mistake. I think that will be corrected next year. And I believe it already has because I believe Watkins Glen is going to be in the playoffs in 2027. And continuing with a little NASCAR news, left fallow for years, Chicagoland Speedway is rough and ready for NASCAR. Well, Christopher Bell thought he knew what to expect showing up at Chicagoland Speedway, and then he pulled his Joe Gibbs Racing Toyota out on the track and realized otherwise. It was rough, Bell said, emphasizing each word, probably rougher than I expected. Well, the 1.5-mile oval in Joliet, Illinois has been sitting dormant for 7 years. It grew weeds, and it aged during that time period, also giving it many characteristics such as bumps and seams and crevices and areas of roughness to give away to smoothness and so on. Well, Bell had taken his feedback from teammate Denny Hamlin coming into the week, as Hamlin is one of the three drivers who did the Goodyear tire test in April at the track. It's still the practice still threw Bell for a loop. Well, I went out there on lap one. I was like, holy smokes, Bell said. Nothing will do justice for how rough it is inside these race cars. We found out just over the course of the next-gen car how it does really well on smooth tracks. But bumps and rough racetracks, well, they're very hard and challenging for crews and drivers because you need the car as low as you can get it, but the bumps will affect you. So it's going to be a very challenging race. Now, the race car is the reason Sunday that has been highly anticipated since Chicagoland was added back onto the schedule, or since the next-gen car was introduced and quickly took to the intermediate tracks, particularly ones that were worn out. The next-gen car has produced multiple highlight reels from the intermediate races. Chicagoland was already lauded for character-filled intermediate facility, most notably in one of the recent highlights comes from a 2018 battle between Kyle Larson and Kyle Busch. Left many clamoring to see what kind of racing would take place at this track. Now, Tyler Reddick was a driver taken aback after the 50-minute practice session on Friday. The driver of the 2311 told TNT Sports that Chicagoland didn't act or feel like an old surface. He felt like the tire falloff was flat, not as much as expected or as predicted. Quote, I guess I walked away from practice scratching my head a bit, Reddick said further on Saturday. I thought there was going to be a lot of tire fall off, and the track was dormant for a while. I just thought the tires would wear out quicker than they did. Well, comments were made as Joey Logano laughed and responded, and from his practice experience, Reddick might have had more grip, but I was slipping and sliding around. Well, it still feels like what it felt like years ago. The bumps are still there, although they're kind of worse. If you watch the O'Reilly race, they kind of go boop over the bumps. Well, if you kind of, the bumps in the next car, now, it's solid, and the bumps here, well, they're huge. So what's going to happen? Well, the drivers are going to put on a show on today, a 400-mile race, 267 laps. It's going to be a great race. I'm going to use the term challenging all I want because that's what you guys want. That's what the drivers want. That's what the fans want. We're not locked down like slot cars. I would imagine we're going to see some action and some accidents. The bumps in turn one get the car really loose. The bumps in turn four are really bad. Everyone basically has been in clean air during practice. Whenever you get the disturbed air back in traffic across those bumps, I'm sure it's going to create some chaos. So that race is today, and that's going to be on TNT and HBO Max, and that's going to start at 3 o'clock here in Arizona. And Denny Hamlin will be starting from the pole today. Some silly season news. And that news, well, it's going to be changes in IndyCar. NASCAR has confirmed that Dixon will depart IndyCar at the season's end. Chip Ganassi Racing has confirmed the upcoming departure of its most successful driver at the end of the current IndyCar series season. Scott Dixon has recently informed the team he will not be returning in 2027, Ganassi said of the six-time IndyCar champion. Scott has meant so much to Chip Ganassi Racing over the past 24 years, and together we've shared championships, many victories, and countless moments that helped define our organization. Because of everything we've accomplished together, the legacy that Scott has built, we believe will be an important part to give him the opportunity to finish what's going to be his part to finish his career at Chip Ganassi Racing. We made him a multi-year offer just to do that. We respect that he's chosen a different path and wish him nothing but continued success. Scott will always be a special part of this team's history, and we are grateful for everything we've accomplished together. Racer Magazine outlined last week that the team has started the process of finding Dixon's successor in the number 9 Honda. We now focus on finishing the series and the season strong, and the number 9 PCN team will continue to prepare future Chip Ganassi racing cars for the team. So, yeah, lots of changes. That was a big shock that Scott Dixon is going to be leaving this team. Now, on the other hand, we talked last week about the fact that Felix Rosenquist is going to be leaving Meyer Shank Racing at the end of this year. He just won the Indy 500 for them. The rumor is that they are both going to McLaren. Nolan Siegel, who is driving for McLaren this year, or it's their last year of his contract, is supposedly out. And Christian Lundgaard, who is actually on the pole for today's running of the Mid-Ohio race and has won two races already, faster and better this season so far than his teammate Pato O'Ward, who is the primary driver for McLaren. So big changes there. So we'll be talking a lot about where these drivers are going. A lot of people are saying that Christian Lundgaard will go take Dixon's seat at Chip Ganassi Racing. So more of that in next week, and we'll talk more as well as what's happening with IndyCar and NASCAR next weekend. Headline reads, record second quarter puts Ford Bronco in striking distance of Jeep Wrangler with sales. Well, there's been a rivalry between the Jeep Wrangler and Ford Bronco since the latter part of 2021 when the new model of the Bronco was released. And yes, we pointed more than once how close that race has become. Midway through 2026, Jeep has sold 86,254 Wranglers to date, while Ford sales tallies stand at about 76,936, a good bit behind Wrangler, but Ford says it has momentum on its side. Well, the Bronco delivered a record second quarter and first half results, outselling Jeep Wrangler for the quarter, the company said in a filing with a K8 Securities with an investor call. Second quarter sales up 15.9%, and first half of the year sales grew 6.8%. The numbers do indeed back up Ford's claim. The Jeep cumulative sales strong for 44,000 units in the past 3 months weren't quite as robust as the 41,000 in the past 3 months. The spring-summer sales decline seems to be an odd trajectory for a convertible off-roader, but we're not privy to Jeep's marketing or incentive strategy. On the other hand, pushing the Bronco plenty hard, the company sold 45,739, so beat them by about 1,000 units over what Jeep has sold. But the early 13,000 unit deficit put Ford in a pretty big hole. With two quarters to go, well, we're going to see what happens. Ford is crediting its record-setting second quarter Bronco gains. That means Ford will have to continue selling quarterly sales if it hopes to gain enough ground to dethrone its crosstown rival. It's still anybody's game. We'll see what happens by the end of the year and see if Ford can overtake the folks over at Jeep. Well, it's time to talk some gas prices with our friends over at AAA. Right now, the average gas price in the United States is $3.80 a gallon. Here in Arizona, the average gas price is $3.93 a gallon. Move over to New Mexico, $3.71. Colorado, $3.64. Utah, $3.81. Nevada, $4.57, and over in California, $5.38. So that's quite a bit of a drop. California has been close to $6 a gallon many times. As we head to the east, Texas, $3.31 a gallon, $3.32 over in Oklahoma. So we head east, states like Florida at $3.77. Pennsylvania at $3.95, Indiana at $3.06 a gallon. All right, let's see what's going on with our gas prices here in the great state of Arizona. Well, all I can say is, wow. How about this? $2.95 at the TA Express in Littlefield, Arizona. How about this one? The 76 and Shell station at 3455 West Glendale Avenue, $2.99. The Maverick Station in Littlefield, $3.12. The In the Zone and Apache Junction at $3.19. Arco and Tucson at $3.25. Sam's Club at $3.25 as well. So gas prices are coming down, and boy, do I love that. All right, let's talk some other gas stations here in Metro Phoenix where gas is inexpensive. The Shell station on Country Club at $3.39. The Costco on Arizona Avenue at $3.39. And the Sam's Club, which were the leaders last week with cheap gas in the Metro, $3.44 on the one in Tempe and $3.44 at the one in Gilbert. We've reached that time. It's time for a little car talk. Dear Car Talk, I have a Ford Explorer Sport with an EcoBoost engine that is approaching 90,000 miles of service. I've changed the oil every 7,500 miles, and most of the time they've sucked the oil out through the dipstick tube. My question at 90,000 miles, is it a good idea to have the mechanic drop the oil pan for a good cleaning? And that's from Mike. No, Mike, it's not a good idea. This isn't like spring cleaning in your house when you've been using a broom for 6 months and it finally occurs to you that you actually scrub off the used chewing gum off the floor. And there's several reasons why you do not want to do this. First of all, it's a big job to drop the oil pan on that car, and it's expensive. It also might create a problem that you don't currently have, like someone might strip out the bolts when reinstalling the oil pan or pinch a seal and create a leak. The second reason not to drop the oil pan is it's not necessary. A lot of people think, well, there's sludge sitting at the bottom of the oil pan and it needs to be removed. But generally speaking, if you've changed your oil on a regular basis, there shouldn't be any sludge at the bottom of the pan. Now, in the old days, engines were much dirtier and they would build up carbon deposits and crud. But we rarely see that anymore, especially engines that use synthetic oil and have been regularly maintained. And more importantly, if there is sludge at the bottom of the pan, well, that's where it's going to stay. So just leave it. The oil pickup tube won't suck up that crud from the bottom of the pan. It'll suck up the liquid above it. Now, if you really feel like you need to do something more than change your oil, find a mechanic who will remove the drain plug and drain out your old oil. He can even pour in a can of clean oil after that to see, once it's drained, to see if it pushes anything out. And there might be something at the bottom of the pan. But probably there's going to be nothing. So hopefully he doesn't strip out the oil plug when he puts it back in or under tighten it so it falls off when you're driving and all the oil runs out and then you need to get a new engine. That's why most of the oil changes nowadays are done via the tube. Good luck, Mike. Yeah, that's one of those situations where if it ain't broke, don't fix it. And I certainly appreciate preventative maintenance as much as any other guy. And I understand the question. I think it's a legit question. But the reality is that you might create a bigger problem than you actually have. And we certainly don't want to create additional problems for your vehicle. So don't go looking for trouble when there's no trouble at this point in time. Well, folks, that's all the time we have for the car show today. My name is Jeff Wine. We will meet you back again on the radio next Sunday, and you're listening to Sun Sounds Radio of Arizona.